So carbon capture, obviously this is a really important stuff. I've been following climate change for a while, but I confess carbon capture is not something I know a whole lot about. But could you sort of just give us an overview of what the whole concept of carbon capture is?
Sure. No, absolutely. Carbon capture is, in the terms that we think about it, is going to a power plant, probably a coal-fired power plant, but potentially natural gas fired power plant as well. And on the back end of it, after the scrubber, the bag house, all the other existing pollution controls, putting in a system by which CO2 is removed from the flue gas, as it's called, which is mostly nitrogen, oxygen, water, CO2, plus some small amounts, the other bad stuff that we think about, sulfur, mercury, and essentially removing most of that CO2 from that stream, so that way the power plant is really just returning nitrogen, oxygen, and water vapor back to the atmosphere. So it's essentially preventing that CO2 that is created from the combustion of coal or natural gas from ever being released. And the way you would go about doing that, there's several processes. Solvents, which is what we focus on primarily. That's what we've been granted those two recent patents on, but there's also membranes, solid sorbents, other hybrid processes. There's been a number of technologies proposed in development.
Okay, gotcha. And so you're looking at these solvents, and I guess in the article that I read, it sounds like you were saying that this could be a really cheap option for energy companies?
I think so. I mean, we're not the only ones developing solvents out there. There's been a big push over the last really 7 to 10 years with funding from the United States Department of Energy for researchers, universities, companies, national labs to look at this solvent that is going to be used, whatever it might be. And so we've had hundreds of ideas, I think, come out and be published from our group and others just on how to use the solvent to maximize the energy efficiency by which CO2 is removed, and to really meet those goals of, you hear different goals. DOE says increase of electricity of 35% is the target, so less than that number. Other people talk in dollars per ton of CO2. You know, we'd like to have it less than $40 a ton or $30 a ton. And so it's hard to put an absolute number on that because it's going to vary power plant by power plant, but those are the numbers. And we think, you know, the solvents we're developing and some of the work other people are doing as well could meet that no more than 35% increase in electricity cost.
I'm not sure if you have any contact with these companies, but do you think that there is a heavy interest amongst groups like, say, Alabama Power, mm-hmm. who are probably, I would guess, so very interested in this technology?
Yeah, Alabama Power has been one of the most proactive companies in America when it comes to carbon capture. I know very well they've got a project down in Mobile, not with us, but it's with a Japanese company, and that's one of the biggest pilot plants for CO2 capture in the entire world. So Alabama Power has been really proactive. We also have the United States Department of Energy National Carbon Capture Center in Wilsonville, just south of Birmingham. People may not realize it, but the state of Alabama and Alabama Power and University of Alabama, this is actually one of the leading regions or states in the entire world when it comes to carbon capture and research.
Okay. So I guess this could also be applied to natural gas plants when they start being built more, I guess?
Yeah, exactly. It's a different set of operating parameters, but the solvents you develop for coal for scrubbing CO2 emissions should translate directly to natural gas. You just have to tweak some things because natural gas-fired power plants, they emit less CO2, as we know. So that's why people are switching from coal to natural gas. As one way of helping reduce emissions, especially while natural gas is cheap. But technology developed for coal CO2 capture could be translated to natural gas CO2 capture.
One of the criticisms of fracking that I've heard is that while it may be cleaner and it burns less CO2 or releases less CO2, there's the risk of methane leaks. Would carbon capture help prevent that, or is that something that happens like in the drilling phase?
Yeah, that's entirely separate from what we're doing. Those methane leaks that come from fracking, I mean, that may be pretty hard to contain. But it's not really in the landscape of what we're doing.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Sure.
How did you get involved personally in researching this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it goes back quite a ways. When I started grad school in 2002, I went to the University of Colorado. I was actually given a project on gas separation membranes. And initially, the target was to separate oxygen from nitrogen, which is a notoriously difficult separation. It's one of the holy grails of separations, as they call it, if you could make that work efficiently. So one thing led to another, right? I was in grad school for about 5 years. And right about the time I was graduating, you know, the whole issue of CO2 capture started gaining momentum. So the CO2 from coal plants, especially. CO2 has always been removed from natural gas. When natural gas is coming out of the ground, it contains CO2. So that's been done for 80 years at least, the removal of CO2 from raw natural gas. But 2006, 2007, the whole topic of pulling CO2 out of flue gas, you know, the emissions of coal-fired power plants, that started to really gain momentum. And so as I was graduating, I wanted to get more involved in, you know, the solvent-based CO2 capture. I had done polymer membranes before that for a while, but I really saw the solvents as interesting. And so 2007, 2008, really started to do a lot of research in that area as a postdoc. I stayed at the University of Colorado, and we had some technology that we thought was really promising at the time, and me and a couple of my coworkers, good friends of mine, we started a company out there called Ion Engineering. We met some business folks out in Colorado that helped us get it started, and we started trying to push these technologies for solvents, what we thought were more energy-efficient technologies, to commercialization. We thought, wow, what a great opportunity. Obama took office in 2008, right? All this climate change legislation we were hearing about. We said, wow, you know, we've got this cool technology and you know, we're going to pitch venture capital and off we're going to go, right? But we never had a cap and trade bill necessarily. So the VCs were always hesitant to invest in something they didn't know how they were going to make money on. But fortunately, the U.S. Department of Energy was and still is funding solvent-based CO2 capture research and development. So it's about that time we got to know some people at DOE and NETL, which is in Pittsburgh. It's the national lab that deals with fossil energy. And they liked what we were doing. So they gave us a grant, which started in 2010. But I'd already moved to Alabama to become a professor at that point. And the company Ion Engineering in Boulder, it's still in existence. They're doing really well. I work with them every day, just about. We're part of a project. So we got the funding through DOE to try our solvent. And what we found then was that after the first phase of that project, we really determined that, you know, the solvent that we developed at Colorado maybe really wasn't everything we hoped. But in parallel, I was developing some technology here at the University of Alabama that was even more promising. And that's kind of been what we've been running on since. So it's been about 4 years now that we've had DOE funding to scale our technology. And we're looking in the next 2 years, we have the funding to actually go and do a pilot plant at an actual coal-fired power plant. So that's the status, the history of how we got to today.
So I guess for Ion, the company that you just mentioned, there's probably some good money to be made, I guess, from this.
Yeah, you know, a lot of it's going to depend on geography as well as technology, right? So it's going to cost something to capture CO2 from a power plant. How that cost is passed on is going to depend on, can you use the CO2 for something? So in certain geographical regions, it makes a lot of sense to take the CO2 that you capture from a power plant and put it in a pipeline and sell it to oil companies for enhanced oil recovery. So essentially taking that CO2 that we are capturing from the power plant, pumping it into oil wells that are not economical to produce oil from anymore by conventional techniques. But what CO2 will do is it dissolves in the oil and it makes those wells that have production's been stopped on, you can stimulate them and you can start to get oil back out of them fairly easily from what I understand. So in the right geographic locations, yeah, there's going to be a market to sell that CO2 and get better production of domestic oil.
Would that sort of defeat the purpose of cleaning the oil? Like, would it come back and then would it sort of perpetuate the whole cycle of the global warming?
No, I mean, I think, right, the CO2 that goes into the enhanced oil recovery, you can use it. I mean, it's within a loop, right? I mean, it's not necessarily just emitted right back. But yeah, when you think about, okay, yeah, I'm using the byproduct of a fossil fuel to get another fossil fuel, you say maybe that's the case, right? So we have to weigh our advantages and disadvantages. And if we say domestic oil, okay, that's a good thing than buying oil elsewhere. I think it's hedging bets at this point. I mean, I think it's not the ideal scenario like you described. We'd love to have carbon-free everything, but it has some advantages in the short term. But yeah, I see what you're saying, and I could see that viewpoint as well. And we're using CO2 to get oil to make more CO2. It's a fair question.
Yeah, but I guess you know, if you're making it more efficient, then you know, maybe it's valid in terms of the fight against climate change,
right,
and that
right.
sort of thing.
And I agree. And efficiency is a big part of things we don't ever talk about, right? And how much waste do we create just by being humans and not turning off light bulbs when we should? So we can blame the oil and the coal and whatever fuels we're burning, but I think we also have to look at our own habits as well and just be less wasteful. And, you know, the electric companies are glad to sell you electricity as much as you want, but it's your option or decision to turn that light bulb off or use less power or however you go about your day and being efficient or inefficient.
Do you expect with the new EPA regulations announced, or I guess they're not put into place yet, obviously, but do you expect there to be sort of an explosion in the idea of this carbon capture starting now, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's real. I mean, that's for sure. When they say 30% reduction by 2030, yeah, I mean, that's really real. Electric companies are going to be, they're going to be planning towards that. And I think the explosion in the research and ideas, it's already happening, and there's several research ideas and companies already in place. And so I'm hoping, you know, especially for all the work we've been doing over the last 7-8 years, that really gets accelerated at this point. I mean, we've been doing well, and you know, there's been funding to do it, but now I think a lot more groups and industries and financial people are going to take notice. And yeah, I think it could really get some legs now.
All right. Well, I think those are the questions I had, Dr. Barra.
Okay.
Is there anything else that you want to add before we wrap up?
No, I think, you know, I've just a plug for our chemical engineering department. If any young people are interested in science and engineering, especially in chemical engineering, we've got a great department, and we're growing, and there's a lot of exciting things going on at the UA campus. That's what attracted me here to Alabama. So again, if any younger people are listening and are interested in science and engineering, now's a great time to get involved and think about getting a degree in chemical engineering.